Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report, kicking off today with Brian Lenny. Brian writes the Junior Stock Review website. Him and I spent a lot of time together at the Beaver Creek Conference. And you know what? I've been bringing Brian on the show now for a number of months, and I've been very impressed at how he looks at companies, very much from an engineering standpoint. Brian builds out his own models and tries to more or less take the moves in the precious metals price out of some of his analysis. Now, Brian, let's just quickly recap this Beaver Creek conference. I've been on record saying that it is one of my favorite conferences to go to. You have a lot of time to spend with companies. I know you and I both had well over 30, even 40 meetings in the three and a half days at that conference. But can you share with us your general takeaway in terms of the overall quality of companies in the resource sector, especially when it comes to junior companies, please?
Sure. First and foremost, I definitely agree with what you said. You know, Beaver Creek or the Precious Metal Summit in Beaver Creek is quite possibly the favorite, my favorite conference I've been to thus far. The side note that to that is, you know, we were talking, we have 30 or 40 meetings. I was sort of disappointed that more investable company, wasn't able to meet more investable companies. For me, I had a short list out of my, you know, 30 odd companies. I think I had about five. And from that, I've kind of narrowed down to two that I think are definitely good investments at the time. The first one is Elemental Royalties. It's a private company, but it should be coming public in the near future. And the second is Calibre Mining, which I thought was pretty interesting. And I put on my shortlist right away after talking with their corporate development guy. And going through the information, it was quite interesting to see how that company is valued coming out of this long trading halt that they've been in.
Yeah, well, Elemental Royalties, yes, it is private. I will reach out to the team at Elemental and get an update for all of our audience. It's a company that, you know what, royalty companies, they need to just keep on building by acquiring good royalties, whether they're already in production or have near-term production. That is one thing I think that we all need to watch for when it comes to follow-through. Plus, the company still needs to go through its IPO, which I know is on tap. And then there's also Calibre, who just had to go through raising over $100 million because of the recent deal with B2. And hey, they actually have managed to do it. So if anybody has any questions for Calibre, I will be having their team on the show later this week. What was some of the distinctive natures, though, Brian, of some of the companies that had you shying away? Rather than just looking at some of the good companies that you like, what were some of the factors that you take in and say, you know what, I don't like the direction that this company's going in?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. For a couple of the companies, like there's honestly a few that I had put on my list when I first heard the story, and I thought to myself, oh, you know what, considering where their market cap is, there definitely could be some upside potential given what they have planned out for the rest of the year and kind of moving forward. But a couple of the things that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. First, there was a company that I was very intrigued about, and started doing my due diligence on them after the fact. And, you know, they failed to bring up that they have a royalty or a stream on their gold production, which, you know, greatly changes the outlook that I originally had on that company. Second to that was management compensation. There's one of the companies that I was very intrigued with, put them on my short list. And then last Friday, I was taking a closer look. Love the projects, but the management, you know, the CEO alone made close to $1 million last year in base salary and options and bonus. And, you know, long term, those type of companies that have high management salaries or fees are going to be ones that burn money at a high degree. And really long term, I think aren't good investments unless these guys can really hold their own and push that stock forward. This particular company, their market cap has only gone one way, and that's down. Therefore, in my mind, I don't know how they justify, you know, making that kind of money. The other thing that was surprising. If you compare it to PDAC, the one thing I did like about most of the stories I heard is most of them have cash. And that's a lot different than PDAC, where more than half the companies I met with, again, with this precious metals one-on-one meetings, that didn't have cash and were looking to raise at basically now their bottoms from this past, you know, bear. So yeah, those are a few of the points.
Okay. And just to follow up on those, yes, very important to have cash. And you know what? Some of these companies have been able to raise some cash just over the last couple months. So that has somewhat changed the story. But when it comes to management salaries, even our listeners harp on that a lot and find these companies that are simply just paying their management a disproportionate amount of money compared to what's going into the ground, and also compared to how the share price is going. We still see some of these management teams get paid bonuses when, unfortunately, market cap for the company has gone down. So a bit of a disconnect there. But also when it comes to one thing I noticed at the conference is the fact that there are a lot of production turnaround stories too. Now, obviously, with a rise in gold price, that brings some more deposits maybe back online or back into the limelight. But there are still a number of companies there that are grinding it out, trying to get into production or working on very thin margins. How do you balance this out when you hear companies say, we're bringing this into production, we're going to fund our future exploration with production, but maybe the numbers just don't quite line up?
That's a great point. There was a number of companies I met in that exact situation. Definitely each situation is different. It's hard to kind of generalize an answer to that. But what I would say is I look for project complexity and how I think the management team is able to execute on that complexity. You know, projects that are maybe a turnaround heap leach story, you know, where for whatever reason they were producing, had to stop, and now they're going to start up again and go forward. I think, again, it's a generalization, but I would say maybe those guys would be more, or there's a higher probability of being successful. Whereas some of the, you know, reestablishing an underground mine, some companies have possibly an issue with their tailings, and that's one of the things they need to sort out before getting back into production. Again, like, these things start to get more complex, and I definitely want to see that the management teams, you know, would be very beneficial if they've done it before, but at least has some experience in this sort of turnaround story. And the other side to it is, you know, I want to see valuation. You know, the bottom line is, if it's trading for a low enough multiple of what I think it could be valued at, given the turnaround, it could be worth the risk. And I think for most investors, that's probably where you want to look first is, well, how much value am I getting for the upside potential? And, you know, mixed in with that risk. It's the ones that are, you know, maybe fairly valued at the time, and you still maybe are betting on upside risk where you could get into trouble.
Now, when you talk about valuations, does that mean you're diving into, let's say, PEA or a PFS or any study that the company has put out compared to market cap? Or is there something else that you're looking at when it comes to valuation?
No, that's definitely the biggest component. I guess the qualitative component would be that how much confidence you have in the management team outside of their experience, kind of what you thought of them as a person. But quantitatively, yeah, absolutely. Going to the technical report, you can use Calibre Mining as an example. Their El Limon project, if you look at their right now as it stands, when Calibre takes it over in this, you know, last quarter of 2019, their after-tax NPV is at $1,500 gold is around $90 million. But really, I think the biggest part of that El Limon project is the upside potential in being able to expand that deposit and kind of move that forward. And the same with their La Libertad, which is the other producing mine that they bought from B2. It's really in how they're going to expand that deposit. I would say maybe conservatively, if you looked at it, you could say that I would say that they're slightly undervalued compared to at least to those two projects, not talking about anything else. But really where I think the potential comes is in how they expand those deposits and, you know, move forward with becoming a mid-tier producer with the number of ounces that they could be able to produce.
Well, and one thing to consider is that this company and the management team has done it before. So that's one thing that really attracts me to Caliber. The fact of the matter is, though, these projects that Caliber is working on are in Nicaragua. Do you have any concerns about dealing in that country when it comes to production?
You know, honestly, at first glance or first hearing, yes, I do. But it's ignorant, though, because I really didn't know anything about it. But I think just with what I've read through the technical reports and then talking to a few different people, the one interesting thing about Caliber is that they were doing their exploration in Nicaragua well before purchasing these two assets. And that's something that I like to see, that, you know, it's a continuation. It's not something brand new to these guys. And then, as you say, they do have a past history. So, you know, given that I see a lot of upside potential in the valuation, even though I don't know a lot about Nicaragua, I'm willing to take the risk that may or may not be there because I see potential in that valuation. But, you know, Nicaragua is very new to me, and I don't know the full story.
Okay. And you know what? That's why I'm diving more into it, too. I find this management team very impressive. They've already done great things in this sector. And this deal is one that, in a way, kind of came out of the blue. And I know there are a number of naysayers out there saying they wouldn't be able to close this $100 million financing that they needed to get done to continue to move this transaction forward. And they just announced last week, I believe it was, that they did close the financing. It was oversubscribed, so they ended up raising $102.5 million, and the shares are still halted on the Toronto Exchange, but they're actually traded on the U.S. OTC exchange. So that's something to consider if anybody wants to try to play this stock even before the closing of the deal and the stock becoming, again, free trading on the Venture Exchange. And as I mentioned, please send me any questions or even comments that any of you, our listeners, have on Caliber Mining that you want either Brian and I to discuss or me to address directly with the company, because I will be chatting with them later this week. Brian, it was great spending time with you at Beaver Creek. I really enjoyed all of our conversations. I really thank you for taking some time and sharing your thoughts on our show. And hey, I'll be chatting with you next week. So have a great rest of your week.
Thanks for having me, Corey.